Hello, friend. Thank you so much for downloading this podcast, and I hope you hear something truly, I mean this from the bottom of my heart, something that edifies, equips, enlightens, encourages, and then gently but firmly gets you out there into the marketplace of ideas. I so appreciate your taking the time to listen. But before you start the broadcast, let me just take a moment and explain that this month's truth tool is called SEEK, S-E-E-K, written by my friend David Robertson, my favorite Scottish apologist who is currently serving the Lord in Australia. He comes and visits with us once a month. And he wrote a book called Ask, and now he's written a follow-up book called Seek, Real Word Answers to Real World Questions. And so he literally goes through a whole series of questions like, is there ever a good lie? Or does the Bible have mistakes? Or what does the Bible say about climate change? Or what's the difference between capitalism and communism? And the list goes on and on and on. So it is a fabulous reference book that I know you're going to want to put in your legacy library. So if you'd like a copy of Seek, and we are listener-supported radio, I'd love to send one to you when you give a gift of any amount to support In the Market with Janet Parshall. Simply call 877-JANET-58, that's 877-JANET-58, and offer a gift of any amount. We'll send you a copy of David's book, Seek. Or if you'd rather do it online, go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Scroll to the bottom of the page. There's the cover. It has a brain on the cover, so you can't miss it. Click on the cover of the book, make your gift right through the website, and we'll send you a copy of Seek by David Robertson. Great tool to have, one of those important little volumes in your ready reference library, and I know you're going to be blessed. By the way, when you're on the website, you might want to consider being a Parshall partner. Those are people who give every single month at a level of their own choosing. They always get whatever the truth tool is that particular month. And in addition to that, they get a newsletter that contains an audio piece from me as well. So Parshall partner or just this month's truth tool, either way, it helps us financially to keep moving forward. 877-JANET-58, 877-JANET-58, or online at inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Now please, enjoy the broadcast. Friends, this is Janet Parshall. Thanks so much for choosing to spend the next hour with us. Today's program is pre-recorded, so our phone lines are not open. But thanks so much for being with us and enjoy the broadcast.
It is written. It is hated. It is against the law. It is fuel for the flame. It is cherished. It is what the law was built upon. It is why some were burned at the stake. It is the whip of the master and the strength of the slave. It is a railroad to freedom, a guiding star. It is hope beating in the hearts of the poor. It is poetry, memorized and sung. It is propaganda repeated until ears become numb. It is ancient. It is wisdom tattooed on our skin. It is justice rulers swear to uphold. It is knowledge carved into walls of institutions. It is genius. It is foolish. It is war starting. It is peacemaking. It is in the beginning. It is revelation. It is Middle Ages. It is timeless. It is future for those with faith. It is history for the atheist. It is present. It is inescapable. It is a force in everyone's story. It is a story. It is a book. It is ink on pages. It is tangible. It is physical. Hold it, read, taste it, see. It is fleshly. It is human. It is otherworldly. It is strange. It is mystery. It is mysteriously powerful. It is inside outing. It is upside downing. It has turned the earth on its head. It has shaped our world, and yet it is a world often left unexplored. It is a world worth exploring. It is worth your time. What you discover just might be divine.
I bet we have your attention, don't we? Hi, friends. Welcome to In the Market with Janet Parshall. What a wonderful representation of the impact of the Word of God. Look at all those things it's done, is doing, and will do. Now imagine a world where there were no Christianity. What in the world would that be like? That's going to be our topic this hour. Let me give you our number because I want you to jump in as questions come to mind. And boy, I hope they do because we have a great conversation this hour with a wonderful teacher. 877-548-3675. 877-548-3675. We get to talk to a New Testament scholar a teacher, an apologist, and a speaker, and that's all wrapped up into one person. Dr. Jeremiah Johnson is with us. He loves to teach people how to contend for the faith. And this is a man who also believes that you can be a Christian and you can use that gray matter, yeah, that 3.5 pounds right between your ears, that being a Christian thinker is not an oxymoron. He believes that so much that he is the founder and the president of an organization called Christian Thinkers Society. Just let those words fall down gently on your ears. By the way, that's at Houston Baptist University. It's a permanent part of Houston Baptist University. And that works out really well because Jeremiah is also an associate professor in the School of Christian Thought there. He's a marvelous author. His brand new book is called Unimaginable: What Our World Would Be Like Without Christianity. Prepare for a great conversation. Jeremiah, the warmest of welcomes. I knew this book was coming. I love this book, and I'm so glad we're going to spend the hour together talking about it. Congratulations, friend.
Well, Janet, thank you, and you have the greatest voice in Christian broadcasting, and I'm always honored to be on with you. Thank you for your bold voice for Jesus Christ.
Oh, thank you so much. I got to talk to you about the dedication because I know you are as passionate about the Museum of the Bible as I am. I just am so grateful that finally, after much anticipation, we have 430,000 square feet dedicated to the impact of the Word. You dedicated to a mutual friend, and that's Carrie Summers. Why did you dedicate Carrie, make the dedication to Carrie, who is in fact the president of the Museum of the Bible?
Thank you for asking that dynamic question. Carrie Summers, as president of the Museum of the Bible, I think embodies what God can do with a man. Keep in mind that Carrie's not a pastor. He probably could be in many churches, but he was a businessman. And Bill Bright phoned Carrie before Bill died and went to heaven and said, God wants to use you in a special way. And that phone call from Bill changed Carrie's life. And he used all of the natural God-given abilities and talents, but he dedicated those to Jesus Christ. And he took on this project, Museum of the Bible, and I'm delighted that Museum of the Bible is a key sponsor of Christian Thinkers Society in our international tour. And I've just seen the impact, not only in Washington, D.C., but now, Janet, all of the plans for a permanent Bible museum in London, for the United Kingdom, in Asia. It's not just about the United States, as fantastic it is to have a museum dedicated to helping people honor, celebrate, and understand the narrative of the Bible in D.C., but there are now plans afoot, and I know this personally because of our events with Museum of the Bible in London for global museums. And that's why we need to pray for and support the Green family, Carrie, and of course, I'm not surprised at all with the attack they're receiving either. Anytime we do something great for God, Satan works in counterattack.
Absolutely. In fact, I have to tell you in all truth, particularly coming to you from the nation's capital, I would be very disappointed if there hadn't been a little bit of a dust up here. If you decide to stand up for Jesus in the nation. That's exactly right. So I'm excited. But I have to tell you, it's a perfect setup to our conversation because as I walk through the museum, as I know you have, Jeremiah, and you begin to see the impact on research and science and music and social movements and women's ability to vote and fashion and literature, and you start thinking, wow, it's not just Genesis to Revelation. It has had and will continue to have an international impact. That's why the news that there are going to be other museums is just brilliant, and rightfully so, because the impact isn't relegated to the United States. The Word had a global impact. So I'm excited about that. But this follows perfectly on the idea of trying to create, as you do in Unimaginable, a scenario that says if you want to know the impact that Christianity has had on the world, pull it out and imagine now the picture without Christianity. That's like saying to the Museum of the Bible, you want to see the impact? Now take it away and imagine a world without the impact of the world. Jim, I think particularly a lot of us in the church take it for granted because it's in every room of the house. It's on every floor of the house. You know, it's always been there. And we really just kind of get cavalier, unfortunately, and don't realize the precious nature of the Word of Life. Am I right or wrong on this?
You are absolutely right, Janet, and for every listener of this program, it is so important as followers of Jesus that we have a thinking faith, that we love Jesus with all our mind. And in my travels the last 3 years, a question that I continue to hear is, you know, Christianity is just so out of date. It's so irrelevant. You know, the world would be so much better. There would be more progress. There would be more innovation if we could just get away from religiosity, religious people, if we could just be a secular society. society, the world would be far better. And so I wanted to write a book to answer that important question, and that's what I did in Unimaginable.
You sure did, and you did it with an exclamation point. We are just getting started with Dr. Jeremiah Johnson, his brand new book, Unimaginable, What Our World Would Be Like Without Christianity. Much more right after this. What is a woman? What's the difference between capitalism and communism? Is there such a thing as a good lie? That's why I've chosen Seek as this month's truth tool. Get biblical answers to questions like these and more as you seek for truth in God's Word. As for your copy of Seek when you give a gift of any amount to In the Market, call 877-JANET-58, that's 877-JANET-58, or go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Dr. Jeremiah Johnson is with us with his brand new book, Unimaginable, What Our World Would Be Like Without Christianity. Hey, you might be stuck in rush hour traffic, but I guarantee you our conversation this hour is going to make the ride a whole lot more interesting. If you get a question, join us because you have a super teacher with Jeremiah, just super, 877-548-3675. Okay, I was thinking about this all day long in preparation for our conversation, Jeremiah. We got to start with terms. So, if you're going to lecture a class, everybody's got to be on the same page. So I want to make sure we're on the same page. When we say Christianity, you realize that we're talking to people from Guam to the Cayman Islands, and I'll bet you there's a whole bunch of different definitions floating around that word Christianity. As you use it in the book Unimaginable, define Christianity.
Thanks for that question. I'm talking about biblical Christianity, and I think it's important, Janet, that because everybody wants to hijack Jesus, even as I say the Made in America cults and other isms and religions, all of the belief systems out there want to make sure they play nice and they're on good terms with Jesus. But the Jesus that I'm discussing, first and foremost, I can say as a scholar, as a historian, as someone who doesn't privilege the New Testament, I'm first talking about the historical Jesus. We can know 65 facts about the birth, death, life, burial, and yes, the resurrection of Jesus before we ever open a Bible, just from extra biblical sources and archaeology. But I'm also discussing, when I say Christianity, biblical Christianity and the biblical Jesus and what we see reflected in the Bible. And so that is the measuring rod. That is the canon, if you will, when I talk about Unimaginable, our world with or without Christianity.
Excellent. All right. Now, that's a good starting point. And I'm not going to do this in order because there's so many parts of the book that I love, but I particularly love counterpoint. So I'll take us out of the world of music and step into the world of philosophy. Nature abhors a vacuum. And I love the war of ideas out there. If you take a look at what a bibliocentric worldview is, it's so markedly different from so many ideas that have been advanced through the ages. So going back to what you said before the break, for those who think that Christianity is arcane, it really becomes the antidote to some really deadly ideas. So you talk about Darwin and Marx and Nietzsche and Freud. I would love for you to talk about those, the worldview they posited, and why Christianity became the antidote. And, you can't tell the player without a program. So I want to know what the proposed outcome of some of those people's philosophy would have been versus the outcome of Christianity. And imagine if there hadn't been the, as I put it, the antidote of Christianity and their nefarious ideas were left unchallenged, what a different world it would be.
Well, thank you for your boldness, Janet. This is a key point in my new book, Unimaginable. There are really two key premises to the book. First, the book explores what the world would be like had Christianity never emerged, but it also serves as a warning to us today of what will happen if Christianity collapses. And then, as you said in your opening monologue, secondly, yes, we celebrate the impact that Christianity continues to have, but let's drill down for a moment, because what's fascinating about it, and I do this in three parts, the world before Christianity, there was a world that existed before Jesus ministered in AD, in the 20s AD, but I talk in part two of the book about the world without Christianity, and guess what, Janet, we actually don't need to imagine it. We have evidence of what happens when we sideline God, and I talk about the big five monsters, philosophers, thinkers who were into dehumanizing humanity by their ideas. And I talk about, of course, Ludwig Feuerbach, Charles Darwin, Karl Marx, Friedrich Nietzsche, and Sigmund Freud. These are individuals that every believer in Jesus Christ needs to know, because again, the job of the Christian is to answer the questions our culture is asking today about the faith. And the ghost of Nietzsche, the ghost of Sigmund Freud, the ghost of Feuerbach, the ghost of Charles Darwin, they haunt us to this day, and they are even gaining traction. For example, let me just speak in German for a moment. Siehe das Opium des Volkes. What did Karl Marx say about religion and Christianity in particular, which he hated? He said it was the opium of the people. It drugged people. It lulled them to sleep to where they couldn't see the economic injustices all around them, and therefore the world would be a much better place if we eradicated religion and we just brought economic freedom and justice, and the world would turn into a utopia. What about Friedrich Nietzsche, Janet? And again, all of these men that I just discussed, these big five, when were they alive? Let's make sure we understand the chronology. In the 19th century, in the 1800s. And I want to make sure that people understand from this book, Unimaginable, the atrocities that we saw in the 20th century, just a few decades ago, 100 million, 150 million dead. You know, Hitler was not an anomaly. Joseph Stalin did not just fall out of thin air. Benito Mussolini, Pol Pot, these tyrants, they had an intellectual foundation that led the way and gave them license to exterminate people who were thought to be of lesser breeds or lesser class. And that was the ideas of Charles Darwin, Nietzsche, Feuerbach, Sigmund Freud. They have been called the great, really, the mind monsters. And again, the worst part, I think I would say, Janet, about Darwinism is that it created the context for new ideas about racism. Racism that could now, according to Darwin's theory, exterminating people, it could even be called scientific. And of course, we have Nietzsche, who's the most influential of the entire lot. And I can say this as a professor, you know, I am so tired of, in many universities, how people like Nietzsche are romanticized, idealized. They don't realize what racist these men were. And so when we push Christianity out, marginalize Christianity, there are no moral absolutes, and ideas begin to emerge that allow exterminating classes, allow absolute genocide, even genocide of individuals just who claim to believe this way or that way. Again, what was it that Nietzsche said? God is dead. And then what filled the void was very scary, and we get players like Hitler and others.
Exactly right. So ideas have consequences. You learn this in your first semester of philosophy class. Good ideas have good consequences. Bad ideas have bad consequences. So I'm hearing the music. Let me just lay this out about the idea that there are principles, first principles. So Nietzsche, for example, makes the declaration that God is dead. Everything else stems from that idea. The antithesis of that is Christianity, that says not only is God dead, he knows you and has a personal relationship with you. Let me talk about the humanity of all of this when we get back. 877-548-3675. Unimaginable. If you were in my class, this would be required reading. It would be on the syllabus, and you could not use the Cliff Notes. You'd have to read it from cover to cover. Unimaginable, what our world would be like without Christianity. Dr. Jeremiah Johnson, our guest and the author, back after this. We are visiting with Jeremiah Johnston, and I just so appreciate all the work that he does. He is the founder and the president of Christian Thinkers Society, that is a resident institute at Houston Baptist University. He also serves there as an associate professor in the School of Christian Thought. So here's his passion. It's the fire in his bones. He wants to teach us how to think, okay? When you come to the Lord, not only is your heart transformed, but your mind is renewed. We should be able to contend winsomely in the marketplace of ideas. So I love it when great apologists like to nudge us by writing what-if books. So here's the what-if question. What if we lived in a world without Christianity? In other words, the antidote to deadly ideas is one that's the opposite, the antithesis. So we were just talking about some of the most nefarious ideas in the world promulgated by men who started with the idea that God is dead, like Friedrich Nietzsche. So, Jeremiah, this goes to the whole question of humanity. First of all, it's a kind of situational ethics. If you start with the presupposition that God is dead, you have to work backwards. You don't arrive at that conclusion. You make that declaration and everything gets backfilled, if I can put it that way. The antithesis of that in Christianity is, says God is real. And as a result of that, I have to see necessarily a different way in which my fellow man
is valued. In other words, if God is real, then the image of the Creator is impugned to every single human being. So I'm not going to push them in the ovens. I'm not going to kill them through a communistic worldview. I'm going to have to value them. So in other words, those first principles have a profound impact on where we go with our ideas, it seems to me.
It is utterly, we cannot appreciate today because of our historical distance. I think a passage that every one of us, Janet, should have memorized is Galatians 3:28, because it just embodies and illustrates, I think, your point and complements it. The Apostle Paul was a Pharisee. He was a Jewish man. You know, he did not believe the promises of God were for anyone other than Jews. He did not believe in the open election, if you will, of the resurrected Messiah, and that is why he persecuted Christians. He had this experience of meeting the resurrected Jesus, and then and only then could he write a letter to the Galatian church and say, there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female. We are all equal in Christ Jesus. That was earth-shattering to the Roman world. And so we have to take a step back, and as good thinkers, Janet, we have to ask ourselves, why did the church grow in the face of such adversity? I mean, in the first 300 years of the church, there was intense persecution. And as I point out in my book, Unimaginable, what's fantastic, the church was putting all the cults and pagan deities out of business. I mean, Pliny is sent to modern-day Turkey by Emperor Trajan because no one's going to the pagan temples anymore. In fact, they're falling apart. No one's offering sacrifices. And this is the same time when they accuse Polycarp, the early church father, of being a, quote, destroyer of our gods. And you know what? That gives me chills, because as Christians today, what false gods should we be destroying? What boldness should we take? And that's why I love your program, Janet, because you inspire us to get out of our comfort zone and to be bold and tear down these false pagan altars that are all around us. But guess what? We can't do that if we don't know something. And that's why I think it's important, and you make a valid point, when we take God out of the puzzle, it becomes the law of the jungle.
100%. So, and by the way, let me just say how much I appreciate what you just said, because for the longest period of time, I think people pull back. They think that if there aren't a series of initials after their name, they're going to go into the marketplace of ideas and they're going to be deemed to be foolish. And so we pull back out of fear of rejection, where in fact it has to be the antithesis. But the scripture says to study to show ourselves approved. So there really is a kind of rolling up your sleeves, turning off your devices, and just hitting the books, doing your homework. And that takes a kind of self-sacrifice in a world where you can flip through a page or your remote control or your iPhone in 15 seconds. Turning things off and preparing your mind to really study is antithetical to this postmodern world in which we live. So that's why I thank you for what you're doing. So let me go back to these ideas about a world without Christianity. Chesterton said, Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and not tried. So it raises the question, why does someone, and you have this whole section of the book where you talk about this, why does someone become a God denier then? Aldous Huxley, why would someone start with that idea that God is, or Nietzsche for that matter, why does someone arrive at that posture when even the heavens declare his glory? I look at the seasons. I see a baby being born. The evidence is overwhelming. You have to shut your eyes and cover your ears to say he is not. So where does that come from?
Again, excellent questions. And I want to say this because there are 35 pages of notes in my book, Unimaginable. So I'm not just making assertions here. If you want to dig down into any of the answers you're hearing me give to Janet Parshall today, you can dig down into the deep footnotes. Many of them are in the original languages of the author. So I want to be very clear with what I'm saying right now. Why do so many people become atheists? First and foremost, because it accommodates their sinful behavior. I would recommend a book that is tightly argued by James Spiegel, The Making of an Atheist. There's another book called Intellectuals by Paul Johnson, several others that I cite in my book, where case after case, many of these atheists, think of the new atheists. I mean, Christopher Hitchens, the late Christopher Hitchens, the new atheist, Janet, His dad died at a young age. He had a broken relationship with his father. His mom ran off with a Church of England priest, and they died in a suicide-murder pact. I mean, you can imagine what his experience was like growing up in that environment. And the second thing that I noticed in my research is many of these atheists have broken relationships with their earthly fathers. And so that has huge implications for their view of God, their view of morality. But without a doubt, and I just actually submitted a article for my what I write for Fox News, because, you know, what we see right now happening with all of the sex sin around us that's coming to light, we are really seeing the evil fruit from the sexual revolution. And what led up to the sexual revolution, the thinkers that I actually identify in part two of Unimaginable, Aldous Huxley, Bertrand Russell, these men were sex predators. And they would have lost their position today.
No kidding. I want to pick up. I want to explore this. We'll do more when we get back. Friends, this is Janet Parshall, and I want to take a moment to remind you that today's program is pre-recorded, so our phone lines aren't open. But I sure do appreciate your spending the hour with us. And thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of the program. Let me give a big shout out to our Parshall partners. Thank you, friends. Parshall partners are becoming the backbone of this ministry. Their generous monthly gifts allow us to provide relevant, compelling programming every day. When you become a Parshall partner, you'll receive private emails directly from me, a weekly audio message only you will hear, and special behind-the-scenes updates as well. Become a Parshall partner today by calling 877-JANET-58 or go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. I got to tell you, if I were anywhere near Houston Baptist University, I would audit every class that Dr. Johnson teaches. He does such a wonderful job because he, in fact, in his newest book, Unimaginable, let me give this as a case. He could write in a very esoteric fashion. He's got all the fancy schmancy stuff after his name. Okay, he got his doctoral, he did his doctoral residency at Oxford University at the Oxford Center for Christian Studies. Got his PhD from Middlesex University. Yeah, and we're talking the UK, okay? And when he got it with commendation, which is academic talk for there was a bunch of gold stars on his report card, okay? So I love the way, if he wanted to, he could deal with in this strictly academic fashion, but he doesn't. But he wants to do is equip so we can contend. It's just that simple. And so he takes this marvelous approach where he creates a kind of another world of saying, what if there were no Christianity? What would the world be like? And so he examines the world before, and then he tells us as a warning to the church, you need to understand this is why we have to be good apologists, because Christianity is waning, in case you hadn't noticed that. Doesn't mean it's any less legitimate or applicable or profoundly important or simply profound. But it means that if we're not out there contending in the marketplace of ideas, what's going to happen? So we've got to this really excellent point about talking about the consequences. Ideas do have consequences. We were talking about the fact that with all of the conversation out there about sexual predators, if there were no protective moral code given to us through Christianity, not by a cosmic killjoy, but by the unconditional lover of our soul, wouldn't we just let our bellies be our God, and we would basically do anything necessary to satisfy ourselves, right? So in his piece that he submitted, Jeremiah writes this, and I thought it was brilliant. He said, if you, in their day, the Bertrand Russell, Jean-Paul Sartre, Aldous Huxley, Alfred Kinsey, Margaret Mead were celebrated as the great thinkers. What they did wasn't great. Their behavior, philosophy, speeches, and publications create an amoral ideology exploited by today's sexual predators who prey upon men and women. There is a kind of, and this I know the secular world takes umbrage with, because the spirit of rebellion has been there, quite honestly, Jeremiah, since we walked out of the garden. But one of the blessings of Christianity, and that's my verbiage, is that there is a moral code given to me by a moral code giver that prohibits me for my own protection and the protections of others by letting self, the id, if you're going to be psychological, lead in everything. If I take something that doesn't belong to me, whether it's sexual or it's property, the restraint comes from me, for me, through the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, which is part of a bibliocentric Christian worldview. Talk to me about that. You remove that out, and what's to prevent me from taking my neighbor's goods and killing somebody who stands in the way of my self-actualization?
Well, first off, if you're ever in the Houston area, you can always teach my class because I would sit and take notes anytime you wanted to lecture, Janet, okay? So that's a deal. Secondly, I want people to understand, our listeners, you and I are not speaking about a pie-in-the-sky kind of world. Right. I just read an article just 2 weeks ago on something else I'm working on, Janet, that the BBC, that is the British Broadcasting Corporation, reported that the UK church, they do a census every 10 years, has lost 10,000 Christians a week to the tune of 5 million since their last census. And get this, they actually put in print, there will be no Christians left in the United Kingdom if the trend continues by the year 2067. That is in my lifetime. And so we're not talking, the question you just asked that was so profound is, you know, this isn't some netherworld. If Christians don't stand up, if believers in Jesus Christ don't take, you know, stop taking a knife to a gunfight, and what I mean by that is that we have to contend for the faith, Jude 3, we have to actually know what we're talking about so we can engage, as you say, in the marketplace of ideas. If we don't do that, if we just stay on this road, evil will follow. Because again, as you just said, without God, there is no ultimate authority that provides direction to us. And I want to say this, if you're considering atheism, and my heart reaches out to you right now, why don't we just look at the legacy of atheism and agnosticism versus the legacy of Christianity and people of faith? Is the world better off? I mean, you know, there, and I want to say this, there are many atheists who are good people who absolutely recoil at the crimes committed by atheist regimes. But I worry that these decent, good people do not fully grasp, Janet, the potential for the harms that an atheist worldview brings about. For example, and I say this is logic. If atheism isn't true, if I'm an atheist, it is impossible for me to condemn war. It is impossible for me to condemn oppression, genocide, crime as evil. Nor can I praise someone, or there's no standard for equality or love or good. It doesn't matter what you do, for there is no right or wrong. Good and evil do not exist. It's all relative. And here's what I would say, what I love to share in our events with Christian Thinker Society. You know, the only place where we have relativism, Janet, is in our behavior. You know, I don't know anyone who wants a relativist to be their airline pilot. You know what I mean? The pilot just decides to land a plane that day. If I go in for surgery, I don't want the doctor to be a relativist. There are laws they have to abide by for success. It is only to accommodate our behavior when we push God to the side. And what I want to really help people understand, because I began to just sense a burden to write this book, that, you know, many of my college students, Janet, and many good Christians in the church, their ideas just simply don't reflect the facts of history. They're a little murky about, you know, what was World War II all about? And we've been so influenced by the post-Christian hostile education around us that, you know, maybe Nietzsche wasn't so bad of a guy after all. I needed to right the wrongs, if you will, and equip Christians. And so I think it's important that you bring up a vital point. It is indeed, there is no principle. I quote several ethicists in the book, and one of them that I'll never forget is Friedman, who said, without religion, the coherence of an ethic of compassion cannot be established.
You know, and I don't want to put this too simply, but let me tell you something I just gleaned out of what you said. One of the profound distinctions between a Christ-centered worldview and one that is the antithesis is that the Christ-centered worldview, out of necessity, cannot be me-centric. The secular worldview is completely me-centric. In fact, in the same piece that you write about, you talked about Bertrand Russell, famous author of Why I'm Not a Christian. Well, that shows, because your life really showed what it was like when you were not a Christian, how he was a serial adulterer, etc. That is, I have a need, I want it, I'm taking it, whether it belongs to me or not. That is antithetical to a world that says, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow him. But therein lies the sticky wicket, because the distinction could not be any farther than day is from night and light is from dark. But that's why I think so many people are saying, no, I'm going to pull back, because they see Christianity as nothing but rules and restraint, as opposed to liberty and, honestly, a sense of licentiousness. How do I, as an apologist, get over that so that people cannot see that it's a series of rules, therefore it's not repugnant, but in fact it is the very definition of liberty?
That's such a great question. Well, I think first and foremost, we start with the Jesus of the Bible, where we began this radio broadcast. Jesus came to give us a holistic, abundant life. He said something so powerful in John 10, I've come to give you life and give it to you more abundantly. And that is powerful. And again, if we could have been alive in the day and age of Jesus, and we haven't even had time to discuss what that world was like. I mean, this was a culture of death, and Jesus brought life to that world. No wonder the crowds would press in on him. No wonder people wanted to see him. The one with the hemorrhage just wanted to touch him because he brought true life, true purpose. And what we've seen throughout the halls of history since Jesus Christ incarnated, I mean, I was just thinking of the writings of Augustine when you were talking just a moment ago, Janet. I mean, he tried to fill his life with so many things, and he realized that our hearts have a God-sized hole. And anyone who's listening to the sound of our voice knows that until you bend the knee of Jesus, that is truly life. And as Christians, we don't look forward to death, but because of the resurrection, we're ready to die because we know that life is not just about the 80 or so years here on earth. Life is about what we're going to do for eternity with God in our resurrected bodies. And yet, when we look at these others, like Bertrand Russell's and the antithesis to it, I mean, you brought up Bertrand Russell's writings. I mean, why I'm not a Christian, he just didn't like it. I mean, there's no profound arguments. I mean, that's the thing that I want to let our audience know, Janet. And, you know, in my time in the United Kingdom study in Oxford, I read every argument there was against God, against the historical Jesus, against the resurrection. The man who actually examined me in Oxford from Cambridge. He was a student of the great William Barclay, the great Bible backgrounds guy who incidentally did not believe in the miraculous. I mean, he didn't believe in the resurrection of Jesus. And so none of that I experienced persuaded me. In fact, it emboldened me in my faith because there is just so much evidence. And what I want to encourage people, there is more evidence that proves the truth claims of Christianity than at any other time since Jesus walked the earth. I mean, you saw that in the Museum of the Bible, and all you have to do is apply that evidence to your life, and you watch this fulfillment, this joy, golly, don't you think we need more of the fruit of the Spirit when we think about everything that's happening in the world, a little bit more self-control, and that would lead to joy? I mean, there's so many passages that come to mind, so thank you for bringing up that powerful point, Janet.
And I thank you for helping us to understand that why this is so crucial is because while we live in a world where there's a lot of duality, there's also absolute polar opposites. You cannot be about satisfying self and also serving others. The two are mutually exclusive. And Christianity reminds us again and again and again about the value, the dignity, and the worth of our fellow man, and the privilege we have to be able to serve them. So many of the people that Jeremiah writes about in his brand new book, Unimaginable, put forth ideas that were absolutely the antithesis of that, and history is filled with the story of what the outcome was. Unimaginable, absolutely fascinating book. I also have a link to the Christian Thinker Society, their website as well. So go to inthemarketwithjanetparshall.org. Is it just me, or is this hour flying? I'm glad I have one more segment with Jeremiah back after this. Thinker Society. I just love to say that because I'm shouting from the rooftops that guess what? You come to faith in Jesus Christ, and no, you do not put your brains in a box and slide them under the bed and never use them again. In fact, it is exactly the opposite. I actually think that you become a clear thinker for a multiplicity of reasons, not the least of which is God is not the author of confusion. So suddenly there's order and form and purpose where there was muck and mess and a miry kind of world that didn't make a whole lot of sense. And certainly a lot of the people that Dr. Jeremiah Johnson writes about in his book had those murky, muddy worldviews. And as a result of that, well, some of the consequences of their ideas were and are to this day, by the way, deadly. Just you can't sweep them aside and say, oh, that was the 1850s. That doesn't have any relevance today. No, like an odious cloud, their ideas are still out there and they'll take you captive, as it says in the book of Colossians, if you're not careful. So I love the book Unimaginable because what Dr. Johnston does is he wants you to understand what the world would be like without Christianity and also a wake-up call for the good that the church is doing today. So to the skeptic and the cynic who is listening, and I'm thrilled you are, you stick around, okay? I want to challenge you. I want to provoke you to ask questions. I want you to really push back if you hear something you disagree agree with, but I want you to think above all else. So to the people who say, check the box, arcane, that was then, this is now, you don't understand, we're developing artificial intelligence, we're just gallivanting into the future, and Christianity plays no role or relevance today. One of my favorite parts of the book, Jeremiah, is when you point out what, in fact, Christians are doing today. Talk to me about the impact Christianity has had, as an example, on the penal system or social movements or education, or, and the list goes on. If I lived in a world without Christianity, all of those institutes and systems that I just referenced would be so markedly different than what they are today. Plead your case in defense of this.
You're absolutely right, Janet. And if we only had time to just talk about how Christianity not only stamped out racism in the fourth century, but is working to stamp it out again right now. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. But what is the church doing right now? Well, first and foremost, I want to say this is a Hurricane Harvey evacuee survivor. My wife and I, along with our five children and triplet babies, were emergency evacuated during Hurricane Harvey. We couldn't return to Fort Bend County for 8 days. And you know who was here? Do you know who, what group was here in the ensuing days and weeks to help rebuild the 179,000 damaged homes in the wake of Hurricane Harvey? It was the Church of Jesus Christ. Christians of all denominations came rushing in. And it's actually, I'd already finished the book, Janet, but it's absolutely profound to me that Christians were outpacing the government to help people rebuild their lives from Hurricane Harvey. So I have a very personal answer to this question. But there are 350,000 religious congregations in the United States. And so what would happen if all of those just vanished tomorrow? I mean, first of all, I want you to appreciate the fact that the church is serving 70 million Americans each year, fueled by $20 billion in private donations. Another study was done that basically said America would starve if there was no such thing as the Christian church, because get this, you think of the billions of dollars our federal government spends to help the homeless. Guess what? 60% of the effort of feeding the homeless is done by faith-based, and let me say this clearly, Christian organizations. If those Christian organizations were not feeding the homeless, they would starve. A great majority also, I mean, when you think about it, not only are they providing services to devastated areas, we think about just the numbers. I mean, I find this fascinating because I looked at all these studies. The financial impact of Christianity in America registers at $1.2 million each year. That is the financial blessing of Christianity. That is more than the gross earnings of Apple and Microsoft combined. I mean, I also think it's one point that I think we could even talk about further, Janet, is the fact that 90 million Americans live in recognized shortage areas geographically where it's recognized by the federal government they do not have people to help them with their mental health challenges. And this is where the church steps in. Do you know that the Church of Jesus Christ, again, 353,000 clergymen spend an average of 138 million hours of mental health services for free, ministering especially to those 90 million Americans who do not have help for depression, anxiety? Because, again, someone who's struggling with a mental health challenge will always go to a priest, clergyman, or rabbi before consulting a therapist. And, you know, I could go on and on, and we this is just what's happening right now. And keep in mind, historically, I want to make this very clear. The ideas of universal freedom, so just taking a step back now, that is freedom for all people, not just political freedom, those find their cut and thrust. They are rooted in the Judeo-Christian worldview. And I could tell you, historian after historian, even secular historians who have said this, that until the Judeo-Christian motif came around, there was no ideas that took hold of universal freedom.
Breathtaking, isn't it? And there's just so much in the book. We could spend an hour almost in every chapter. Let me say that I love the fact that God chose to make me as a woman. I don't ever see myself as a second-class citizen. But that's deeply, deeply embedded in my bibliocentric worldview. In fact, walking through the Museum of the Bible again, I took a picture of exactly how much Scripture had an impact on women saying we wanted to pursue the vote. So I have real liberty. Without Christianity, I wonder what role women would have in our society today.
Well, that's a great question. Women would not be free without Jesus Christ and the institution that he founded, that is the Christian church. In fact, I open, if you want to know what the world was like before Jesus came about, I actually quote a love letter from the first century BC. I don't want to lose anyone. Yes. It's called Pioxy 744. It just means it was found in Oxyrhynchus. It's document number 744. It's a man writing to his wife. He's writing a love letter. He's working up in Alexandria. She will have the baby before he returns. And he actually says to her, if it is a boy, keep it. If it is a girl, throw it out.
Yes.
I mean, just
yes.
Let that sink in for a moment. Such was the equality or the lack of equality in the time of Jesus. And what do we see that Jesus does? He elevates women. Everywhere Jesus went, he freed women. He elevated them. He gave them purpose and value. And I think that we can never forget that, Janet.
No. Oh, and Jeremiah, that's just a tiny little bit. You know, I say this often, but really good books, I'm never going to be able to cover a lot of ground in an hour. It's like throwing a stone across a pond. It may skip, but that doesn't mean that there isn't depth to this body of work. And there's a lot of depth. Folks, there are over 31 pages of footnotes alone. So as Jeremiah said, if something catches your fancy, you can even do more research on all of the footnoting that Jeremiah has done. It is such an important book. We are called for such a time as this. If Christianity is waning because some people think it's outgrown its usefulness, then why don't you and I become apologists in defense of Christianity, what it has done, what it is doing, and it will do before Jesus comes again. The book is called Unimaginable: What Our World Would Be Like Without Christianity. Again, I have a link to the Christian Thinker Society website. I am so excited about the fact that the church is understanding we have an opportunity, and the opportunity is now to really influence and occupy until he comes. My thanks to Jeremiah and to you, friends. We'll see you next time.